It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A new program in the state called Spread the Vote is aiming to boost voter registration and voter turnout by helping residents get proper identification. Their Project ID initiative focuses on getting them to track down the necessary paperwork.
You know, we work with clients who have experienced house fires. We're looking to work with clients who've lost their vital documents in floods.
We'll have that story coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A lawyer for coal companies owned by the family of West Virginia Governor Jim Justice has responded to a civil lawsuit filed Tuesday by the Justice Department and federal mine safety regulators seeking $4.7 million in delinquent mine safety fines and fees. Brittany Patterson reports.
Former federal prosecutor and Charleston-based attorney Michael Carey, who is acting as counsel for the Justice Companies, responded to the lawsuit filed Tuesday by the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Virginia. The suit alleges 23 coal companies owned by the Justice family racked up thousands of mine safety violations and repeatedly failed to pay associated fines. According to the federal government, those companies owe nearly $4 million in penalties. The federal complaint says they ignored multiple demands to pay the delinquent debts. Perry disputed that claim.
The justice companies are frustrated that the U.S. Attorney's Office decided to go forward with this litigation at this point, because we've been negotiating with them to resolve this matter for several months now.
Despite the lawsuit, he says the justices will, quote, continue to try and get this matter resolved. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
After West Virginia's voter ID law went into effect last year, an organization focused on increasing voter registration and voter turnout launched a new initiative in the state to help people gain the proper identification. Spread the Vote is currently operating in 9 states, and as Corey Nolinger reports, it's not only given people a chance to vote, but a better chance in life.
Voting, getting a job, buying a house, flying, staying in a hotel, all of these seemingly unconnected actions have one thing in common. You need some form of ID to do them. That doesn't sound like a huge requirement to most, but not everyone has an ID. As West Virginia Spread the Vote Director Peshka Calloway points out, there are a ton of reasons someone might not have an official form of identification.
You know, we work with clients who have experienced house fires. We're looking to work with clients who've lost their vital documents in floods, you know, because we've seen a significant amount of floods here in West Virginia. So, you know, being able to respond to people who are in their most need, whether they, you know, lost their documents that way, or they lost their documents because they got lost or they got stolen.
Spread the Vote, which launched in West Virginia earlier this year, is launching a new initiative aiming to help those without IDs obtain the documents needed to get a federal ID. The initiative is called Project ID and currently has chapters in 6 different parts of West Virginia in an effort to cover as much ground as possible. Project ID takes clients and helps them figure out what documents they need and takes them through each step to acquire those documents. Project ID pays for the whole process. Calloway is passionate about the work. She says she's lost those important documents herself.
I've personally was impacted. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and I left my abuser and left mine and my son's vital documents behind. And so I know the difficulty of trying to navigate the bureaucracy to try to, like, prove who you are.
But the passion doesn't stop with Calloway. There are over 20 volunteers working across the state as part of Project ID. One of those volunteers is Rosemary Ketchum, the Northern Panhandle chapter leader. Ketchum says she loves the tangible difference she can see she is making when working with Project ID.
With Project ID, you can literally quantify in number the change you're making. You can say, I ordered 15 birth certificates and I have 12 IDs on their way. And that's real change in people's lives.
Calloway says getting an ID can open a ton of doors for a person who hasn't had one for a while.
You know, when I say I have a man who hasn't had a photo ID since 2013, think about that life, right? It's 2019. Think about all the years and all the barriers. I mean, he told me he couldn't get a bank account in his name. He hasn't been able to get a Greyhound bus pass because he doesn't have an ID. And so, you know, this life without it, people don't think about it until they lose it.
Project ID will be expanding with the launches of two new chapters in the coming weeks. A chapter in Huntington begins work on May 25th, and the Beckley chapter is scheduled to launch on June 3rd. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Corey Nollinger in Wheeling.
2 years ago, the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources published a report stating that much of the state is at risk of outbreaks of blood-borne diseases such as HIV and hepatitis C. The agency concluded that one of the most effective means of preventing the spread of these diseases is through harm reduction programs. There are now at least 18 harm reduction programs in the state. They offer health services to people who inject drugs. Many of these programs also offer clean needles to people who inject drugs and collect used needles as a way to reduce the spread of infectious diseases. But a new study by researchers at West Virginia University finds that a fear of arrest may be preventing some people from using syringe exchanges. Roxy Todd spoke with the lead researcher, Steve Davis.
So, Steve, for this study, you collected data from over 100 people who use needle exchanges. And what did you hear from people as you were collecting this data about if they feel afraid to go to a needle exchange? Is that what a lot of them told you?
Some of what we heard, first off, many of them talked about the critical importance of the programs. Many of them referred to them as lifesavers because they are concerned not only with infectious or blood-borne diseases such as hepatitis C, but also endocarditis and other types of infections that you can get from sharing needles. But a lot of what I heard and was confirmed in our quantitative surveys is that there is a legal conundrum with regard to being able to use the new needles that are obtained or bring them back. And it is often due to a fear of getting in trouble with police for having a syringe on their person. Whether or not the syringe was used or new. And I absolutely heard that in some of the qualitative research I conducted. It didn't matter if it had anything in it at times. They may have been criminally sanctioned, whether that be a citation, arrest, or otherwise. And so this was perceived or mentioned as a real barrier, not only to attending the exchange. We know that from the literature that people may not even go to get new needles because of a fear of getting in trouble with the police, but also in bringing back, I mean, the whole purpose of needle exchange, the public health purpose of it, bringing back needles that perhaps might be contaminated with infection because they don't want to get in trouble if they are stopped by police and found to have one on them.
Now, critics of needle exchange programs say injecting narcotics, abusing drugs is against the law. These people are breaking the law. Why should we enable them by giving them clean needles? At the same time, it's a public health risk for the community at large, for kids, for police officers who may be accidentally stuck by needles. I mean, how at risk are we in West Virginia for outbreaks like hepatitis C in relation to our opioid epidemic?
Well, certainly what you mention is the legal conundrum. You know, the first part of your comments, it is a very difficult issue because injecting obviously illicit substances is illegal. However, I think what is lost in the message is that the one very important goal of needle exchange programs is linkage to treatment. And the approach is absolutely meeting people where they're at. And it's no different than trying to quit smoking. Obviously, those who have smoked and tried to quit, there is a lot of contemplation that goes in preparation, mental preparation of getting ready to quit before you actually try to quit or engage some type of treatment. And what needle exchange, the needle exchange model, the harm reduction model, is truly to meet people where they're at, to treat them as human beings because of the stigma that is rampant in the community with regard to injection drug use, but to treat them as human beings as they're contemplating quitting so that when they're ready, they have a mechanism and these programs can facilitate entry into treatment. But while they're contemplating, the harm reduction model then is to keep them and the public safe. So the second part of your question, how at risk are we? Certainly what I can tell you is we have been in the midst of a hepatitis C epidemic. Central Appalachia between 2006 and 2012 had a 364% increase in new cases of hepatitis C. But Central Appalachia absolutely has been in the midst of a hepatitis C epidemic that is directly related to injection of heroin.
What should lawmakers, in your opinion, be considering as they evaluate how to stop the spread of infectious diseases across West Virginia?
So certainly I leave policy to the policymakers. I believe that the research indicates that we should take a look at paraphernalia laws and potential decriminalization of syringes and syringe possession. In North Carolina, which is a very similar state politically to West Virginia, they were successful at actually passing decriminalization legislation. And one of the ways they were able to successfully pass the legislation was to get law enforcement support. And that law enforcement support they were able to get by educating law enforcement that this is something that could keep you safe. If you are searching a subject and stuck with a needle, if you can reduce overall HIV and Hep C in the community, which the research overwhelmingly shows these programs can do, and also really working with law enforcement to make them aware and the public aware that linkage to treatment is the ultimate goal. And it's really just trying to keep people safe and the public safe while they're getting ready to quit, you know, no different than smoking. And so I think decriminalization of syringes is something that certainly could be examined. Others in urban areas have called for decriminalization as well. However, as usual, we would continue to need to do more research because it's a complicated issue. That may only be one piece of the puzzle, certainly one piece of the puzzle that should be looked at, but there may be other policy considerations out there as well.
Steve Davis is an associate professor in the School of Public Health at West Virginia University. He was speaking to Roxy Todd about a study that looks at why conflicting drug laws may contribute to hepatitis C infections. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Also, be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Dave Mistich. I'm Teresa Wills.